Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, December 21st, 2017. Participants at the high-level forum appear close to signing a ceasefire, but a government spokesman says the Kiir administration still has problems with its language about buying arms.
The government acquires its arms legally. And any other person who is a rebel acquires his arms illegally. So it is this illegal acquisition of arms which was prohibited.
And government operatives are accused of harassing some society members at the talks.
Whenever I speak, they would take my picture in the video camera. And also that we conclude that they have been doing it maybe to the rest of civil society.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese stakeholders meeting in Addis Ababa are likely to sign a ceasefire agreement to end hostilities tonight. Government spokesman Michael McQuay says the positions advanced by armed and unarmed groups are unrealistic. The opposition groups are demanding that the government should be prevented from buying and stocking arms, a condition which threatened the signing of the ceasefire agreement in South Sudan.
Yes, we were here up to 12 midnight because of two issues. We had only two issues which were not addressed, and these are the issues that are keeping us up to now. One is the parties were prohibited to illegally acquire arms and military equipment. This provision, of course, the other parties, the rest, were against the use of the word illegal. And we said we stood with that wording because the government acquires its arms legally. And any other person who is a rebel acquires his arms illegally. So it is this illegal acquisition of arms which was prohibited. Because the government has the right to acquire arms for performance of its functions and duties, for the protection of the nation, for all these functions.
The international community has been saying that they have poured a lot of money into South Sudan to help people, to prevent people from starving. Why would you buy arms when your people are starving?
What is important is not, we are not buying arms as such. But as a matter of principle, the government is under duty to protect the sovereignty, the integrity, of the country, the territorial boundaries of the country. It is under duty to protect its citizens. All these are cardinal functions of any country. And as such, there is no way you would tell me that you don't buy arms. We will not buy arms, but as a matter of principle, we don't want to set a bad precedent.
What is this bad precedent?
A bad precedent is when you equate a government with the rebels. And you say, government, don't buy firearms for your own, for protection of your country.
Now, the second issue I understand is that you are also still on loggerheads with the other groups because of the proposal that they want the CITESAM, the Monitoring and Verification Mechanism team, to be based outside South Sudan, because if the other groups, the other strange groups, are going to be included in CITESAM, these strange groups are saying their security is not guaranteed in Juba, so they want it to be outside. Is that correct?
Yes, this is the second contentious point, and not that only, but of course, CITESAM is based in Juba. It had been operating all this time. And the strange groups or the who are negotiating with us now are of opinion that that the CITESAM should be based outside South Sudan. Of course, this is not acceptable. It is not true. It is unrealistic. Because how much are we spending now on CITESAM alone, meanwhile it is in South Sudan? And if we say CITESAM should monitor the peace, the agreement from outside the country. It means that they will be flying in every day.
The Troika countries had issued a statement earlier warning the stakeholders to this revitalization forum that those who are blocking the way will face consequences. And it looks like the government and the other groups are both disagreeing on some of these issues.
It doesn't mean that we just give in because we are under threat, and as such we must accept whatever. That is not true. We don't agree with that. We are here, whether it is us or the rebels, we are here to negotiate good peace so that we don't go back to war. The agreement which is being revitalized now, proof to be not to be implementable in terms of some of its provisions. And this is what led to the revitalization now. So we don't want to come up with another agreement that may lead to another, I don't know what term will they use this time for the review of the agreement, but we don't want to come up with such a document again.
That's my colleague John Tanza speaking with government spokesman Michael McQuay from the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa this past hour. One civil society group at the talks in Addis is complaining about what he calls hostilities against civil society activists. Bill Boutros Bill, director of the South Sudan Human Rights Society for Advocacy, says civil society groups are being harassed by government security operatives at the talks in Addis Ababa.
Whenever I speak, they would take my picture in the video camera. And also that we conclude that they have been doing it maybe to the rest of civil society. So that's what is happening. This morning we wrote a protest letter to the IGAD special envoy on South Sudan to take appropriate action and make it public that the intimidation and harassment cannot continue because we are for peace and government should cease even hostilities against civil society.
And why are you not comfortable with someone taking your picture?
Well, it's not a matter of taking the picture, but it is a question of taking the video camera, video picture, and then once of our friends who was near that person who was taking the picture was asked why he was taking, and he said the civil society here have the hidden agenda. And when we were trying to speak the truth, to make sense to the parties, that no party should drag us back, neither the opposition nor the government, they should come to terms with the reality that our people are suffering. So instead of intimidating us, taking our pictures, and more by when we are speaking in the video camera, means that it is a kind of intimidation. They just want to coerce us not to speak, but we are speaking on behalf of the boilers.
Do you feel comfortable here when you are talking about these issues, asking the government and the opposition groups to bring an end to the violence in South Sudan? Do you feel comfortable? You feel secured?
Actually, we are not secure to speak on these issues. But
why?
But you are here
under the auspices of IGAD. Well, why should you be uncomfortable?
In the premises of the discussion, we are comfortable. Our security is okay when we are here talking. But it is after this forum, what would happen to any of us? And it's one of the things that I put in the protest letter to IGAD, the special envoy, that they have to take into consideration, if any of us disappears after this conference, they will know who is responsible. And we made it very clear that the government security agents would be responsible on that. And we made quotes of the previous happening, like the human rights lawyer, the former Secretary General of South Sudan Law Society, Dong Samuel, was also kidnapped. So these are the events that have been happening. So if they could bring them up to the discussion forum here, then it is a concern. And that's why I wrote a protest letter to the special envoy to take notice of it.
And let me get it clear. You're not based in South Sudan. You're based in East Africa. And so if someone is taking your picture, you are still uncomfortable. Why?
Yes, actually, I am currently in Ethiopia. I've been one of the civil society leaders being pursued by the government and by the government security agents. And we have been accused several times of sending reports to the United Nations, sending reports to the United States Department of State, sharing the information on human rights violations in South Sudan. All these have amounted to us being harassed, being intimidated, and being looked after by the government security agents. So it is a concern For me, I take it very seriously, because if they have come up to the room of discussion where we are trying to make sense of talking of ceasing hostilities and making peace, peace should come to our people. It is a concern, because it is the same continuation. It is a continuation of looking after me and up to the discussion room.
That's Bill Boutros-Bill, director of the South Sudan Human Rights Society for Advocacy, speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Addis Ababa today. South Sudan government spokesman Michael McQuay denied any harassment of the civil society members by government operatives. McQuay asserts that any civil society representatives operating from the diaspora is managed by the rebels.
In the first place, the government has not brought any security here. All those who are here are delegates, members of the delegates of the government delegation who came from Juba, and they are here. The other people who are here with us are some members of the embassy who usually receive us, and they are all the time with us. So what is stated that there is any harassment, that is unfounded. It is a mere lie. Not that only, but the person who gave this statement is a rebel.
IGAD also invited civil society groups that are in diaspora, Ethiopia, Uganda, and then Kenya.
I'm not denying that civil society has been brought from other parts of the world, but the fact that he claims to be the chair of the human rights here inside South Sudan is not true. He's a rebel. We know him very well. He could be a chairperson of the rebel human rights group.
But you are here to talk in order to find a solution to the problem in South Sudan. Whichever group he belongs to, he's also coming here as part of the solution. Why would there be an issue about him, you know, raising an alarm about his personal security?
Well, these are issues which are usually done by any rebel group. This is what we have been doing to the Sudan government when we were negotiating. And not negotiating, but even when we were at war with them, we would level anything against them. So this is not new. It is not strange. This is his statements are not in place. He even knows that what he is saying is not true. So we all here came here for peace. And if he probably might have not achieved what he came here for, then definitely he can in any way transfer the blame on others, believing that this will definitely give him the opportunity to achieve all that he wanted.
That is South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay responding to civil society group accusations of harassment by government operatives at the talks in Addis Ababa. We asked more residents of Juba what they thought about the ongoing talks in Addis Ababa. Here's what they had to say.
Our message as women and being somebody at the legal professions is that the warring parties who are in Addis should this time be very, very strongly committed to bring peace back home and to also ensure that accountability, justice, and other reparations are really brought to the table to be discussed. We need the perpetrators who have committed atrocities to be held accountable.
There must be a permanent ceasefire where every citizen must feel that there is peace and security. All those who are displaced in refugee camps or internal displaced in UNMISS protection sites will be able to go to their home. The so-called 32 states must be revoked to the 10 states. There must also be some improvement in economic sectors. Also, I need also to see that these parliaments must also be dissolved. A caretaker government must be formed. We expect a transitional government must be formed, like what happened during the time of Charles Taylor in Liberia when he resigned. A caretaker government was formed. Then an election will be organized by a caretaker government.
When it comes to peace, we all need peace in our country because we all know what has been happening. All I can say is they should just cooperate. Cooperation is all I can say. They should cooperate and do what took them there. All we need is peace, and all we want them to bring back is peace.
We're speaking for 2018. We need peace, and we need them to unite, and we need the country to unite, as to stop this thing of tribe and from here to here is not good. We are now hoping for peace for 2018. By all means, let them work very hard for us.
I think this is the last opportunity that they have to restore sustainable peace in South Sudan. We are saying as citizens, we don't want any more monkey tricks. They need to leave behind their egos and their selfish interests. They need to look at the suffering of the people. It's really hurting to see people dying every day. And I think this is the last opportunity for them really to bring peace.
I would like the warring parties to put their grievances aside, silence the guns. While they discuss and iron out their differences, women are suffering, children are suffering. So please, for the first time, put the civilians of South Sudan before any ego, before any pride. Consider the suffering innocent civilians that have nothing to do with this war.
They are going to really tackle this issue in good faith and limit the agenda of political agendas and come up with a concrete solution to resolve the conflict in this country. So, above all, we want to see the kind of inclusive kind of system that will bring all the warring parties on board and see that again that, okay, the cessation of hostilities and there is a declaration of ceasefire such that we stop the suffering of our population.
What I want them to do is to please put the interests of South Sudanese first. I mean, we have a lot of different issues. I know they have a lot of issues, but they should not look at their issues right now, but rather put the interests of South Sudanese first. And whatever decisions they make, let them think about the people of South Sudan who are suffering.
My strong message is that let's put South Sudan in the front face as number one. And leave their own interests or any personal interest on that matter, then the peace will be successful.
As a citizen of this country, I am eager to see peace. Everybody has an ambition that by the end of the process, peace is going to be there. And if you see the world is watching and everybody is asking what is going to take place, and for people who are there discussing on issues pertaining South Sudan, they must put South Sudan in their hearts. And what we will expect from them is to bring us nothing but peace.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Refugees being taxed for vehicles in Uganda are given options. Find out what they are when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite drink and why?
I like guava juice. It tastes good.
My favorite drink is malt. I think I like that one so much, and it fills you up once you're hungry.
Yeah, ginger drink. It refreshes me, and that one also, because the taste and health-wise is beneficial.
My favorite drink is, I would say, water, because it's easily available. Well, it's something that the body needs, so I prefer taking plain water to other sugary drinks.
I prefer fruit juice. It has this flavor, and also fruits are very important to human development.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Six aid workers who went missing in South Sudan's Lul State 5 days ago were freed last night by the SPLA-IO rebel group loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. A UN official in South Sudan has confirmed the aid workers' release, as we hear from Waki Simon-Wudu for VOA from Juba.
UN Coordinator for Humanitarian Affairs Alan Nadau says the 6 aid workers we are employed by Solidarities International, HealthNet TPO and Action for Development and are all accounted for. All but one of the workers is South Sudanese. Nadau commends the efforts of all parties who worked to ensure their safe return. SPLAIO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampaul Gabriel told the South Sudan in Focus his group turned over the 8 workers on Wednesday to the World Food Programme without condition.
Yeah, the 8 workers were released yesterday in the evening after contact made by our leadership with the WFP team in Juba. So they sent a team to our location. We handed them over to the WFP team, and I think they should be in Juba by now. So the handover was unconditional because we didn't take them by force. It was just like a protection. What we did was a protection. We had to protect them after recovering from the scene of the incident.
The 8 workers went missing after clashes broke out on Sunday between the rebels and government forces in Raja, one day before the high-level forum on revitalizing the 2015 peace deal got underway in Addis Ababa. SPLA spokesperson Brigadier General Lulu Roy Kwong told the South Sudan in Focus on Monday that there were no clashes between government and rebel forces, claiming the rebels attacked commercial vehicles traveling from Wau to Raja. Nadau says the 8 workers were providing food and livelihood assistance in areas heavily impacted by food insecurity and malnutrition in the Bahr El Ghazal region. Gabriel says the 8 workers were released after mediation efforts by the UN Office of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA.
They made sure they responded very fast to make sure they contacted us, and we managed to release them. The other unfortunate event is when we were in the process of establishing contact with the WFP, the government started pursuing us and trying to get our location and trying to attack our base where the 8 workers were kept in. And that was very unfortunate because it was going to cause harm for our workers. So what we did was to move them far away from the area.
Gabriel says he is relieved the 8 workers are back safe and sound with their families. Nadau reminds all warring parties of their obligation to respect the neutrality of humanitarian operations and facilitate safe and unhindered access for humanitarian workers providing life-saving aid to vulnerable people throughout the country. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudanese refugees in Uganda's Moyo district say they cannot pay large customs taxes on vehicles and motorbikes they brought from South Sudan to Uganda. But Uganda's revenue authority says under a deal with the Office of the Prime Minister, refugees who cannot afford to pay customs are free to use their bikes and vehicles in Uganda for personal use only. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from Moyo in northern Uganda.
The refugees say the Ugandan Revenue Authority gave them 4 options when they arrived. Pay for Ugandan license plates and use their vehicles and motorbikes freely. Pay a monthly road user fee of around $20. Use the vehicles and motorbikes only within the refugee settlements or don't use them at all. The refugees say since they do not have money to pay Ugandan authorities, most of them chose to use their vehicles and motorbikes only inside the settlements. Some refugees claim that Ugandan custom officials have impounded assets within settlement camps. Apollo Wani, a refugee at the Morobi camp, says in July, Ugandan Revenue Authority officials stopped him as he was taking his son to a nearby health center. Speaking in Arabic, he says they confiscated his motorbike.
I told them, please, I am taking my sick son to the hospital. What should I do now? I don't have any money to pay, but they grabbed my motorbike and loaded it onto their vehicle.
Mule Moses, who is also from the Morobi camp, says Ugandan officials also seized his motorbike in July.
When I was going to Lofori to carry my goods, because I'm a businessman here, so I used to bring my goods from Lofori up to Morobi here. When I reached on the way, on July, actually I met these revenue guys on the way. They stopped me. Actually, not stopping even. They actually tried as if they wanted to knock me. Then I stopped. From there, those guys, who are moving with the vehicle, they came out of the vehicle. They arrested the motorbike.
Moses says he was unable to raise the cash needed to bail out his motorbike, which the revenue authorities sold off last month in an auction for seized items. Some South Sudanese refugees say their vehicles or motorbikes were returned only after they paid exorbitant amounts of cash to officials. Wani says he was asked to pay a $500,000 Ugandan shillings or $140 to have his bike returned.
I paid the $500,000
and they released my motorbike. Since then, I have parked it in the house. I will never use the motorbike because if I run into them, they will seize it again.
Wani Milton, a South Sudanese refugee from the Palorinya settlement, says he used his bike to transport people and goods within the settlements. He says the money he used to earn went toward paying for necessities for his family.
My earnings from the motorcycle, now they have taken. Where do you think will I sustain my life? Okay, well, UN can provide us with all, okay, food. What about other things? Even the medication itself is very poor. But to using my motorbike, the little money I got from my motorbike is when I can afford to buy other things, basic needs.
Uganda Revenue Authority spokesperson Seruma Vincent says under the arrangement with the Prime Minister's office, refugees can use their bikes and vehicles so long as they are confined to the settlements and not used for businesses.
We entered into an administrative arrangement with the Office of the Prime Minister to demand that all vehicles that come with refugees are registered with the Office of the Prime Minister, and registration which they make with the Office of the Prime Minister, give us a copy.
Vincent says refugees are often tempted to use their vehicles or motorbikes for business outside the settlements, and if that happens, they are penalized.
The vehicle or the motorbike is treated like any other smart body item or item for which taxes are not paid, which have maximum amount of period, I think, and then beyond which the authority would be free to auction the vehicle or that asset.
The Ugandan revenue official says he has no information about agents impounding assets in the camps. He says if government agents go into the refugee camps, it is only to verify that vehicles, motorbikes and other assets are properly registered. Vincent adds that the only time refugees are required to pay money is when they intend to acquire Uganda license plates, which allows them to operate freely, including doing business anywhere in the country. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Moyo.
We have breaking news from Addis Ababa. We just received late word from our colleague John Tanza that the signing ceremony for the ceasefire agreement has commenced at the African Union headquarters. We'll have more details on this development on tomorrow's program. And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Wonosu Nas by Isaka Number One.
I respect you, Mr. Flavor. Remixed by Isaka Number One. Mata Kuchu Banta Kelenas.
Mata kutu balenas, albi wanu swisim taki, amonu hajata taki ves, asma kalam tanasal kwes, albi saidita befikral kwes, kanu wogisa, kanu fikira, kanu wonusa, kanu doria, lanu finastanin bija, bija umida kalu fogo, umon bikeli mogali, intaza tumaru fainu, intaza tumaru ftesu, Kaninta asuma umon, ajata ki bikarabu. Yala umombi wonusu wonusu wonusu. Yala umombi ataku ataku ataku.
Mata si bumon, dakal dakal sambala, dakal fi ajata ki. Mata si bumon, dakal dakal sambala, dakal fi ajata ki.
Lakabata.
We've been listening to Isaka Number One with the song Wonosu Nas. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Do you have a comment about our show? Let us know. You can find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or check us out on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
Mata dakal fiajatai, mata tabu ana bilai, mata doruara.